called from behind them. 5 seconds till two-way. Who are they? Brinkerhoff asked uneasily. I am the Sky, Fontaine replied, gazing up at the two men he had sent to Spain. It had been a necessary precaution. Fontaine had believed in almost every aspect of Strathmore's plan. The regrettable but necessary removal of Ensite Encado, rewriting Digital Fortress, it was all solid. But there was one thing that made Fontaine nervous, the use of Houlihat. Houlihat was skilled, but he was a mercenary. Was he trustworthy? Would he take the passkey for himself? Fontaine wanted Houlihat covered just in case, and he had taken the requisite measures. Chapter 113. Absolutely not! The man with the buzz cut yelled into the camera. We have orders. We report to Director Leeuwenfontein, and Leeuwenfontein only. Fontaine looked mildly amused. You don't know who I am, do you? Doesn't matter, does it? The blonde fired hotly. Let me explain, Fontaine interjected. Let me explain something right now. Seconds later, the two men were red-faced, spilling their guts to the director of the National Security Agency. Director, the blonde stammered. I'm Agent Colliander. This is Agent Smith. Fine, Fontaine said. Just brief us. At the back of the room, Susan Fletcher sat and fought the suffocating loneliness that pressed down around her. Eyes closed and ears ringing, she wept. Her body had gone numb. The mayhem in the control room faded to a dull murmur. The gathering on the podium listened, restless, as Agent Smith began his briefing. On your orders, Director, Smith began. We've been here in Seville for 2 days, trailing Mr. Ensite Encado. Tell me about the kill, Fontaine said impatiently. Smith nodded. We observed from inside the van at about 50 meters. The kill was smooth. Houlihat was obviously a pro. But afterwards, his directive went awry. Company arrived. Houlihat never got the item. Fontaine nodded. The agents had contacted him in South America with news that something had gone wrong, so Fontaine had cut his trip short. Colander took over. We stayed with Houlihat as you ordered, but he never made a move for the morgue. Instead, he picked up the trail of some other guy. Looked private, coat and tie. Private? Fontaine mused. It sounded like a Strathmore play, wisely keeping the NSA out of it. FTP filter's failing, a technician called out. We need the item, Fontaine pressed. Where is Houlihat now? Smith looked over his shoulder. Well, he's with us, sir. Fontaine exhaled. Where? It was the best news he'd heard all day. Smith reached toward the lens to make an adjustment. The camera swept across the inside of the van to reveal two limp bodies propped against the back wall. Both were motionless. One was a large man with twisted wire-rimmed glasses. The other was young with a shock of dark hair and a bloody shirt. Houlihat's the one on the left, Smith offered. Houlihat's dead? The director demanded. Yes, sir. Fontaine knew there would be time for explanations later. He glanced up at the thinning shields. Agent Smith, he said slowly and clearly. The item. I need it. Smith looked sheepish. Sir, we still have no idea what the item is. We're on a need to know. Chapter 114. Then look again, Fontaine declared. The director watched in dismay as the stilted image of the agent searched the two limp bodies in the van for a list of random numbers and letters. Jabba was pale. Oh my God, they can't find it. We're dead. Using FTP filters, a voice yelled. Third shield's exposed. There was a new flurry of activity. On the front screen, the agent with the buzz cut held out his arms in defeat. Sir, the passkey isn't here. We've searched both men. Pockets, clothing, wallets. No sign at all. Houlihat was wearing a monocle computer, and we've checked that too. It doesn't look like he ever transmitted anything remotely resembling random characters. Only a list of kills. Damn it, Fontaine seethed, suddenly losing his cool. It's got to be there. Keep looking. Jabba had apparently seen enough. Fontaine had gambled and lost. Jabba took over. The huge SysSec descended from his pulpit like a storm off a mountain. He swept through his army of programmers, calling out demands. Access auxiliary kills. Start shutting it down. Do it now. We'll never make it, Sochi yelled. We need a half hour. By the time we shut down, it'll be too late. Jabba opened his mouth to reply, but he was cut short by a scream of agony from the back of the room. Everyone turned. Like an apparition, Susan Fletcher rose from her crouched position in the rear of the chamber. Her face was white, her eyes transfixed on the freeze frame of David Becker, motionless and bloody, propped up on the floor of the van.
"You killed him!" she screamed. "You killed him!"
She stumbled toward the image and reached out.
"David?"
Everyone looked up in confusion. Susan advanced, still calling, her eyes never leaving the projection of David's body.
"David?"
she gasped, staggering forward.
"Oh, David, how could they?"
Fontaine seemed lost. "You know this man?" Susan swayed unsteadily as she passed the podium. She stopped a few feet in front of the enormous projection and stared up, bewildered and numb, calling over and over to the man she loved. Chapter 115. The emptiness in David Becker's mind was absolute. "I am dead." And yet there was a sound, a distant voice.
"David."
There was a dizzying burning beneath his arm. His blood was filled with fire. "My body is not my own." And yet there was a voice calling to him. It was thin, distant, but it was part of him. There were other voices, too, unfamiliar, unimportant, calling out. He fought to block them out. There was only one voice that mattered. It faded in and out.
"David, I'm sorry."
There was a mottled light, faint at first, a single slit of grayness. Growing, Becker tried to move. Pain. He tried to speak. Silence. The voice kept calling him. Someone was near him, lifting him. Becker moved toward the voice. Or was he being moved? It was calling. He gazed absently at the illuminated image. He could see her on a small screen. It was a woman, staring up at him from another world. "Is she watching me die?"
"David."
The voice was familiar. She was an angel. She had come for him. The angel spoke.
"David, I love you."
Suddenly he knew. Susan reached out toward the screen, crying, laughing, lost in a torrent of emotions. She wiped fiercely at her tears.
"David, I thought..."
Field Agent Smith eased David Becker into the seat facing the monitor. "He's a little woozy, ma'am. Give him a second."
"But..."
Susan was stammering. "I saw a transmission. It said..." Smith nodded. "We saw it, too. Hulaha counted his chickens a little early."
"But the blood..."
"Flesh wound," Smith replied. "We slapped a gauze on it." Susan couldn't speak. Agent Coleander piped in from off-camera. "We hit him with a new J-23. Long-acting stun gun. Probably hurt like hell, but we got him off the street." "Don't worry, ma'am," Smith assured. "He'll be fine." David Becker stared at the TV monitor in front of him. He was disoriented, lightheaded. The image on the screen was of a room filled with chaos. Susan was there. She was standing on an open patch of floor, gazing up at him. She was crying and laughing.
"David, thank God. I thought I had lost you."
He rubbed his temple. He moved in front of the screen and pulled the gooseneck microphone toward his mouth.
"Susan."
Susan gazed up in wonder. David's rugged features now filled the entire wall before her. His voice boomed.
"Susan, I need to ask you something."
The resonance and volume of Becker's voice seemed to momentarily suspend the action in the databank. Everyone stopped mid-stride and turned.
"Susan Fletcher,"
the voice resonated.
"Will you marry me?"
A hush spread across the room. A clipboard clattered to the floor along with a mug of pencils. No one bent to pick them up. There was only the faint hum of the terminal fans and the sound of David Becker's steady breathing in his microphone.
"David,"
Susan stammered, unaware that 37 people stood riveted behind her.
"You already asked me, remember? 5 months ago. I said yes."
"I know," he smiled. "But this time..." He extended his left hand into the camera and displayed a gold band on his fourth finger.
"This time I have a ring."
Chapter 116.
"Read it, Mr. Becker,"
Fontaine ordered. Jabba sat sweating, hands poised over his keyboard.
"Yes," he said. "Read the blessed inscription."
Susan Fletcher stood with them, weak-kneed and aglow. Everyone in the room had stopped what they were doing and stared up at the enormous projection of David Becker. The professor twisted the ring in his fingers and studied the engraving.
"And read carefully," Jabba commanded. "One typo and we're screwed."
Fontaine gave Jabba a harsh look. If there was one thing the director of the NSA knew about, it was pressure situations.
Creating additional tension was never wise. Relax, Mr. Becker. If we make a mistake, we'll re-enter the code till we get it right.
Bad advice, Mr. Becker, Jabba snapped. Get it right the first time. Kill codes usually have a penalty clause to prevent trial and error guessing. Make an incorrect entry, and the cycle will probably accelerate. Make two incorrect entries, and it will lock us out permanently. Game over.
The director frowned and turned back to the screen. Mr. Becker, my mistake. Read carefully. Read extremely carefully. Becker nodded and studied the ring for a moment. Then he calmly began reciting the inscription.
Q, U, I, S, space, C.
Jabba and Susan interrupted in unison.
Space?
Jabba stopped typing.
There's a space?
Becker shrugged, checking the ring.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Am I missing something? Fontaine demanded.
What are we waiting for?
Sir, Susan said, apparently puzzled.
It's just...
I agree, Jabba said.
It's strange. Passwords never have spaces.
Brinkerhoff swallowed hard.
So, what are you saying?
He's saying, Susan interjected, that this may not be a kill code.
Brinkerhoff cried out, of course it's the kill code. What else could it be? Why else would Tunkhato give it away? Who the hell inscribes a bunch of random letters on a ring?
Fontaine silenced Brinkerhoff with a sharp glare.
Ah, folks, Becker interjected, appearing hesitant to get involved. You keep mentioning random letters. I think I should let you know, the letters on this ring aren't random.
Everyone on the podium blurted in unison,
what?
Becker looked uneasy.
Sorry, but there are definitely words here.
I'll admit they're inscribed pretty close together. At first glance, it appears random. But if you look closely, you'll see the inscription is actually, well, it's Latin.
Jabba gaped. You're shitting me.
Becker shook his head.
No, it reads, quis custodiat ipsos custodes.
It translates roughly to,
who will guard the guards?
Susan interrupted, finishing David's sentence. Becker did a double take.
Susan, I didn't know you could... It's from Satires of Juvenal, she exclaimed. Who will guard the guards? Who will guard the NSA while we guard the world? It was Tunkhato's favorite saying.
So, Midge demanded, is it the passkey or not?
It must be the passkey, Brinkerhoff declared.
Fontaine stood silent, apparently processing the information.
I don't know if it's the key, Jabba said. It seems unlikely to me that Tunkhato would use a non-random construction.
Just omit the spaces, Brinkerhoff cried, and type the damn code. Fontaine turned to Susan.
What's your take, Ms. Fletcher?
She thought a moment. She couldn't quite put her finger on it, but something didn't feel right.
Susan knew Tunkhato well enough to know he thrived on simplicity. His proofs and programming were always crystalline and absolute. The fact that the spaces needed to be removed seemed odd. It was a minor detail, but it was a flaw, definitely not clean. Not what Susan would have expected as Ensai Tunkhato's crowning blow.
It doesn't feel right, Susan finally said. I don't think it's the key.
Fontaine sucked in a long breath, his dark eyes probing hers.
Ms. Fletcher, in your mind, if this is not the key, why would Ensai Tunkhato have given it away? If he knew we'd murdered him, don't you assume he'd want to punish us by making the ring disappear?
A new voice interrupted the dialogue.
Director?
All eyes turned to the screen. It was Agent Colander in Seville. He was leaning over Becker's shoulder and speaking into the mic.
For whatever it's worth, I'm not so sure Mr. Tunkhato knew he was being murdered.
I beg your pardon? Fontaine demanded.
Hulaha was a pro, sir. We saw the kill. Only 50 meters away. All evidence suggests Tunkhato was unaware.
Evidence? Brinkerhoff demanded. What evidence?
Tunkhato gave away this ring. That's proof enough.
Agent Smith, Fontaine interrupted. What makes you think Ensai Tunkhato was unaware he was being killed?
Smith cleared his throat.
Hulahat killed him with an NTB, a non-invasive trauma bullet. It's a rubber pod that strikes the chest and spreads out.
Silent. Very clean.
Mr. Tunkhato would only have felt a sharp thump before going into cardiac arrest.
A trauma bullet, Becker mused to himself. That explains the bruising.
It's doubtful, Smith added, that Tunkhato associated the sensation with a gunman.
And yet he gave away his ring, Fontaine stated.
True, sir. But he never looked for his assailant.
A victim always looks for his assailant when he's been shot. It's instinct. Fontaine puzzled.